We're going to get started with the case study about the Philippines and the storm that happened last November in the Philippines. This is the first international disaster that I went to as eye-opening. And even Glenn Merritt, who had gone to many of them, said that this was one of the most shocking events that he had ever gone to, especially as we entered into Tacloban City. It was every bit as bad and worse as any picture or video can make it. And something that will be something that none of us that were there will ever forget. So talking with the pastors in the Philippines, we're going to do the layout of this case study a little bit differently. And to keep things interesting, what we're going to do is we're going to start off with a video that Pastor Nick, who is the pastor in Tacloban City, he put this video together and wanted you to see what has happened before, during, and after the storm. Then Pastor Bong, who is the pastor on the other side of Leyte Island. Leyte Island is the main island that got hit in the disaster. Tacloban City got the brunt of it. And then Mahayag, where Pastor Bong is at, got the back end of it. If that's correct, right? And after we see or hear a report from Pastor Bong, we're going to have the pastors come up here, and we'll talk about our experiences and their experiences and what it was like doing ministry on the island days after the event, with body bags everywhere, no power, the smells, and what the experience is, what went well, what went not well, what they would have done over, and what they would have done better at. Then, closing out, we're going to have President James. He will give a brief presentation as well, and then we'll have a closing video. So at this point, let's begin with our video that Pastor Nick put together for us.
Thank you. The video that you have seen was focused in Tacloban, while this short narrative report is will give us an idea of what we are doing also in Mahayag, Alberalete. The average storm that entered Philippine area of responsibility would reach up to 20 storms per year. 8 or 9 of these storms could make landfall to any parts of the country every year. And out of this average, 2 of these storms would make its landfall in the island of Leyte per year. So with these observances, people are actually used and are able to adapt this reality. Expecting storms per year became part of their yearly life. When Super Typhoon Yolanda or Haiyan hit the area of Leyte, people were stunned. It shocked the residents of the entire region. The typhoon was not an ordinary one where people used to manage. It was not the kind of typhoon they used to experience. This one destroys not only their livelihood, but flattened their homes as well. This includes all properties they had saved, invested, and kept for so long. Now, within 3 to 4 hours of strong wind and heavy rain, everything was gone. The municipality of Albuera was part of the region of Leyte, where Typhoon Haiyan took its destructible landfall. It crumpled down 16 barangays or villages and shattered a population of more than 40,000. There are 2 Lutheran congregations and 1 outstation in this municipality, with around 94 Lutheran families living in this area. The municipality of Albuera belongs to a third-class municipality. It means plenty of people living in this area are poor. Mostly, they work as tenants in farms and seasonally work in fishing industry. Now imagine if Typhoon Haiyan destroyed almost all houses and livelihoods of people, what hope could you possibly think of for yourself and for your family if you are one of those survivors? Literally, none. Besides, you cannot also call outside of the island since all communications were downed. No power and no signal at all at that time. When this situation, as a pastor, the first thing I did after Typhoon Haiyan left us nothing, I gathered all the members in the church. We first thanked God of the life He preserved for us. Then we shared our experiences during typhoon, and we listened to the word of God, especially the good news and God's promises to us. We ended the gathering in prayer and carried the message of hope in us. The second thing I did was to ask the church to sponsor my trip to Cebu. It is the closest island in the island of Leyte, in order to communicate and ask help for brothers in faith. Immediately they responded. We received help after 5 days from our fellow brothers and sisters in the Lutheran Church in the Philippines and other partner churches. After a couple of days too, LCMS disaster response team arrived. Their presence truly comforted us. We saw the hand of God in them extending help to us. That action actually gave us encouragement and courage. It gave us an assurance that we are not alone in this hardship and struggle to survive. Thus, we are thankful for your concerns and prayers offered to us. With your help, we were able to distribute more than 4,000 food packs to the community, with at least 10 to 15 kilos of rice and canned goods and noodles consumable for at least 2 weeks. We saw the joy in their eyes upon receiving them, and we heard afterwards positive comments about the food packs they received and the ministry of mercy we were doing. Upon comparing the kind of relief goods they received from others, they said that we gave the best for them. They said that the ministry we did was excellent. We did not only offer help for the members, but extended it to the community as well. I think this is mercy all about. And take note, before we give or offer help, we want to remind them, the people or the community, that the owner of these gifts loved us so much. That is our God through His Son, Jesus Christ. Then the following months we received house kit materials for buildings and repairing houses. All Lutheran families were beneficiary of these house kit materials. Each of them received according to their needs, and we employed around 100 individuals for cash for work in the rehabilitation effort. Then the following month, we also received 440-footer container vans with mercy meals and some quilts in it. We distributed them so far to 4 barangays or villages outside the municipality, 5 elementary schools, and 4 daycare centers in Albera. Again, we received positive comments from the recipients. They were truly amazed how we extended help to them. Parents of students were glad too, because the meal helped their day-to-day need for food and nutritiously nourished their children. These and all other help granted to us, especially for the church, uplift our life. We received books of encouragement also from CPH to guide us to continue immersing ourselves in the Word of God and trusting Jesus Christ. Thus, I would like to take this opportunity again to thank you all, especially to the disaster response team who went with us on the ground, Reverend Glenn Merritt, and now headed by Reverend Ross Johnson. Please keep us always in your prayers. Thank you.
All right, well, this is what we talked about, and this is going to be my kind of like Oprah-like interview of them. They wanted me to kind of talk them through the disaster. I've been to the Philippines, I believe, 4 times since November as we've been working through action plans and executing those different action plans. The first time was 7-8 days after the storm hit. And we came into the bottom part of the island, which is where Pastor Bong was at. And then we were there for a day or two, and then we traveled together. And it was Pastor Bong's first time that we went and visited Pastor Nick and his congregation, which was in Tacloban City. Very different dynamics. One is a big city in Tacloban City, and more of a countryside, which is where Pastor Bong's church is at. Wanted to get your, during this time period also, President James, I believe, was out of the country. He was in the middle of classwork. And when you hear about a storm going into the Philippines, it's one of those things, as Pastor Bong said, it's you always get storms in the Philippines. It's no big deal to them. They know how to weather through it, and they get through it, and it might cause some minor disturbances. But I believe I remember hearing that this storm was 3 times the size of Hurricane Sandy. So when that hit landfall, one of the largest in recorded history to hit landfall, it was something that was even overwhelming to people that were used to going through these types of storms. So I had a question for, Nick and Bong. What were you thinking the first few days before the storm hit? Of course, you get a couple days notice. There's a big storm coming. What were you guys thinking as pastors? And what were the people in your community, your members, thinking or saying about this storm? Were they taking it seriously, kind of blowing it off? Were people worried? Pastor?
Should be good.
The members did not take it seriously because, as I have mentioned, we were used to storms. So for us, it's just like a simple storm. And my wife and I told my wife, "Okay, get ready because this storm is so huge, big, and stronger than ever." And she said, "Ah, we're used to it." So she just lie down together with our baby, and I just packed some things and some foods. And after the storm, after Typhoon Haiyan hit us, then she realized how important it is to prepare always. So I think that's...
So at first, just people weren't taking it super serious. This is going to be another storm. What about you, Pastor Nick?
Well, in my case, in Tagloban City, where I am serving as pastor, just like the case of and the perception of Pastor Bong, we were used to typhoon, and especially in Tagloban City, when every time there is a typhoon, it always passed through Tagloban. And we were used to it. And even if there is a typhoon coming, we see to it that we are ready and well prepared every time. And so I said to my wife, even 3 days before the typhoon came, I said to them, we should buy rice. So we bought, half sack of rice and some canned goods, good for a week, and some meat or fish that somehow we can save in the refrigerator. And it was so. Later, when we... But the whole community, especially in Tacloban City, were also informed by the city government to also prepare, because this typhoon is a very, very strong one, unlike the other previous typhoon that hit the area. And so on the eve of Typhoon Haiyan, the local government unit went to the coastal barangays in Tagloban City and took all those residents and placed them into the respective school that serves as their temporary shelter while the storm is coming. And so even my wife was not around when the typhoon came, because she was also serving as coordinator or facilitator, because she is working at the DSWD, the Department of Social Works and Development of the local government. And so she was not around during that event. It was only me and along with my 3 kids with me and some members of the church who spent their night in the church because they are afraid, especially those who were living in the coastal area. Some of our members came to our church and said, "We will sleep this evening while we are waiting for the typhoon to pass by." And so that's it. Typhoon came, and so the following day, we were amazed because of the gravity and the magnitude of the damage and the life or lives it caused of the constituents in Tacloban City.
When you guys were going through the storm and you're hunkered down in your homes, did you know that it was going to be a lot worse than it was? Did you feel any different, or what was the experience of being hunkered down in your home with your children and with your wife and your newborn? Because you also, Pastor Bong, had a interesting dynamic that you had a very, very young newborn child. What was the hunker down during the storm experience like? When you were hunkered down hiding in the storm?
There were 8 families in the church hiding, actually. And we were one of those. During the typhoon, we started to fear with our lives, because when the roof of the church building started to
blow off and lift off.
Blow up.
Yeah.
And then we realized that this storm was not an ordinary one. And then we saw also, because in the church premises, we had this a communication tower, and that communication tower also fell down. And we thought that after, if the storm would last for an hour, then we were thinking that we're dead. So we started to fear with our life during that time. But I keep on telling the families around that the only hope that we have is Jesus Christ. So I keep telling them to pray and pray and pray.
How about you, Pastor Nick? What was it like, the experience when you were hunkered down with your children and your members inside the sanctuary?
Yeah, when I observed that the water started to enter the door, and I started to look outside the window, and I found out that the water is somewhat rising above than what we see on those water coming underneath the door. So I immediately said to our company in the house, and my niece and my cousins, to get all those things that we can carry upstairs, so that we can go up, and especially those pots, the rice, and some things that we need daily. So we carry it on, even one of our refrigerators. We carry it upstairs, but then even if we carry it after that, that refrigerator was still destroyed because of the water, I guess, that was entered into it, and that caused some parts of it that rust. It becomes rusty, and it destroyed some devices inside. And, well, when I found out also, because when I went up and entered the church, I observed that the surge of water was coming inside the city, and I saw houses carried away by the strong current of waters coming from the coastal barangays, and they were blue inside the city. And the water, I guess, is because our location is somewhat elevated from the main street, and I guess the water outside is somewhat from 5 to 10 feet high. And that's the time that when my child saw the strong current of water coming in, and he said to me, "Dad, am I going to die?" He said to me, and I said to me, "Just pray, and Jesus will save us." But deep inside, I was also praying to myself that, "Lord, if this is the right time for me or for us, if it is the time for us or for you to call us, then thanks or thank for everything." That's the only thing that I guess remind me of the event that happened.
As what was happening during the storm that they didn't realize is, it wasn't just the winds and the rains that were coming down that were damaging the houses. There was actually a tidal wave that was coming in and swept the damaged houses clean. Thankfully, they live right on the coast, but there is a very small hill that was, even though I believe on the downstairs, it was about waist high, the water got up to waist high, but they had a second floor, so that they were safe from the tidal wave, but they weren't safe on the second floor from the roof. Most of the buildings there have, as you saw, that wood paneling with 2x2s on the corner and corrugated metal roofing. The best structures in town were actually the structures that they were in. They had cinder block walls, but most of them were open windowed with corrugated metal roofing. So the corrugated metal roofing really is the weak point in the structures that they were in. And the whole structure is a weak point on what everybody else was pretty much living in at the time. Pastor Bong, what was your initial thought as you got out of the shelter that you were in? You got out of the church and you started looking around. What were you, your wife saying, the members that were with you as you had your first look around the city and saw the destruction?
At first, after the typhoon left us, nothing. Then we realized that we don't have anything. So the first thing I did, as I mentioned in my narrative report, to gather these people, to gather these members around and to ask help from God. And because I know that when you are strong inside, then it will manifest outside. So in order for us to be strong inside, we need the Word of God, we need Jesus Christ, we need the sacrament. And so in that line, I believe that we will manage to take courage of facing what lies ahead. So that's the very first thing I did, because we actually have nothing. We saved some rice. We thought that if the rain was so hard, then it will flood the place. So we put those rice and other foodstuff at the top part, thinking that it will save some food. But we were wrong, because when the roof were blown out, then the rain started to wet those foodstuff. So we had nothing left, and the only hope that we have is Jesus Christ.
How about you, Pastor Nick? When you got out of your shelter, as soon as the tidal wave waters started to subside and you could look out the windows of your church or walk out, what did you feel and see?
Eventually, after an hour of continued rain, and it immediately receded after an hour. And in fact, there were two dead bodies in front of the church. And good that there was a truck that came, and some people coming from the city government unit carried those two dead bodies into the truck. And later, there were several bodies that were recovered, and they were put just in front of the church. And that dead bodies remained there for about almost 2 weeks. And that's the thing that was really hard to see, that every now and then there were dead bodies carried by people, especially foreign partners who came there. And because people in Tacloban City cannot move, because they first have their attention is their immediate family. They are looking for their families where the government put them in the different evacuation centers in Tacloban. And I even didn't know the time that where the church members were, because there were several evacuation centers. I don't know where to find them. So I just looked for them after 2 weeks when after cleaning all the mess, the dirt that raised up to my knee, and 3 to 4 days of cleaning. And after that, And I guess there were two Sundays that we don't have that regular worship. Instead, we just do the morning devotion with my family and a few people who went and visited our church to see if what was our condition that time. And good that when they saw me there, then they were encouraged that the pastor was still there. So I never evacuated, because I think that this is really my place and I should be there and to guide the congregation. And so after 2 weeks, I gradually found some members in the respective evacuation centers. And it was then that I said to them, let us go back to the church and see if what we can do, and let us plan whatever things that we can help to those people who are in need. And so they gather, or we gathered in the church, and we continue our administration of the words and sacraments. And good that some help came in, and that help really, that support of rice and some groceries really help our church members to sustain for say days or week, because I guess the city government at first, if I was not wrong, they gave us 3 kilos of rice and I guess three cans of sardines. Well, when our food relief arrived, we give our church members 20 kilos of rice and I guess 15 kilos of those those groceries, and they were happy for that, because they felt that they are really loved by the church, and even the community, the barangay where our church is located, we adopted these barangays and included them in our relief distribution, and they were happy because they said the Lutheran Church, even if we are just a small church in Tacloban, but we were able to extend our love to them. So that's mercy that somehow we share to them.
One of the difficulties that they had in that time period was immediately after the storm hit, the water subsided, there was looting across the city. So those who were left alive, some were looting, the others were looking for their family members. Immediately they were doing search and rescue for their own family members, trying to find out where they were, or going to the evacuation centers to try to see if they were okay, who made it, who was still alive. So it was absolute chaos, and the government wasn't prepared for the scale of a disaster that they had. And there not only were bodies everywhere, and when he said that there was bodies there for 2 weeks, what it was is not a couple bodies that were there for 2 weeks. It was constantly people were being pulled out of the rubble, putting in body bags and placed there every few hours or twice a day. The city truck, it looked kind of like a city dump truck, would come. They'd open the body bags, identify if it was a male or female, and then they would stack all those bodies and drive them away. We're not quite sure where. But that was happening constantly all day long for the first couple of weeks, bringing bodies in, stacking, lining them, the body bags up. City truck would come a few hours, and then that process would just happen over and over. And where his church is, on the side, on the top of a small hill where the beach is at, you could see, and when we were visiting 8 days later, you could see out of the windows of your church the lines of body bags. And there's so many connections that you could see. You could see literally death all around the church. And it was in the sanctuary, that place of refuge that we were at, but death was all around them. And the sad thing was, there was so much death. It wasn't like you could call the police and, you know, you get some police or fire rescue team to come look for people. Death was everywhere in the city. So the people that were survivors, they were the search and rescue for their family members for weeks, literally. And people from around the Philippines that had family in there, they were desperately trying to enter as soon as they could to find their loved ones. And the picture that that Eric took of me on the inside of your program, where it looks like I'm under the cross shelter, that's actually a broken house that Eric took. And I was talking to a man there that was in a stupor. And he had 15 lost family members in the storm. He had found 7 of them, and where we were standing, he was digging himself, looking for the other 8 dead bodies. There was nobody to help them. And so there's a panic, and so we just went and we listened for the first couple of days as we were driving in with Pastor Bong from the other side of the island. We went for literally 15, 25 miles or so, nonstop houses. And my goal on that drive was I just want to find one house that has a roof on it. We drove for a couple dozen miles straight, and there was not a roof on a house. Every single person received damage. And the most impacting thing to me as Bong and I were driving in with a small group of people was there was children, young children. All of them had signs, "We're hungry, feed us." And I looked over to Bong, because I know different countries, different cultures. When you go to Mexico, Guatemala, you always have young children asking for food and money. And I said, "Is it normal that young children like this hold signs for all the cars driving by or motorcycles?" And he said, "No, I've never seen this before in my life in this place. These children are doing this because they're hungry." And then all of a sudden, it's really easy to think about your grandchildren, or in my case, my children that were 6 and 8, and thinking, imagine if there was a disaster, that they were literally so hungry after a week and a half that they had to run out to the street and hold up signs the first time in their life just to be able to survive. And so you can start to sense just from something like that the absolute helplessness that these people were feeling. The other thing that was strange is after 8 or 9 days, you looked around and we drove up and down the city and around the city. We saw very little from any kind of world relief organization at that time. We saw a few tarps, and we saw a whole lot of Red Cross body bags. I don't even know where they got these thousands and thousands of body bags so quickly. But that was the immediate response, was there was no response. And it was really the church and the church members just kind of taking care of themselves, trying to survive those first few days. And let me ask you, Pastor Bong, what was your impression as you drove in, a Filipino living on the other side of the island, that you'd been there before? What was going through your emotions as we were driving into the city to visit Pastor Nick to check on the members?
Yeah. When I saw children around holding placards like, "Help us," I thought of my little baby. He was 3 months at that time. And sadness came to me, and I got pity on them. I don't normally see children holding that placards around. And so I was so sad, and I kept on praying that there would be somebody who would help them. Yeah, somebody would help them, and I was thinking of us helping them, but we can't because they are too far from us, or maybe an organization that would take care of these children, and that's my feeling.
At that time, immediately, there was no access by airport. They had some military planes coming in and out of a broken airport, which already was extremely, extremely small. And there was no power on the island for a couple of weeks. So when it was quiet and dark at night, it was quiet and dark. I mean, it was starlight only, which when you're around buildings and stuff, you expect to hear, you know, the hum of life and activities, but there was none of that. It was pitch darkness, which also added to this sense of strangeness, helplessness. at the time. And to not have electricity, cell phone communications made you feel detached. And I'm sure you guys were feeling, does anybody know what's going on here? What is the rest of the world doing? Or what is the rest of my church doing? Pastor Nick, what was the first time that you were able to get aid to your people? And how did you start doing that? After the first few weeks, as you were starting to get monies and shipments of food in, how did you go about the distribution of that food to the people? You talk about barangay. Barangay is a neighborhood government and a neighborhood police force that they were utilizing.
Yeah, when I learned through the district president who informed me that some relief goods will be coming, and he said to me, get the church ready and get the help coming from the barangay officials so that they can help you in the distribution, because that time people were so violent, because once they saw some foods carried by vehicles or trucks or jeepneys, they will take that food from you because of, I guess, the hunger that drives them to do so. That's why it's a very dangerous to just walk along the street carrying some foods with you, because surely there will be people who will come to you and grab that from you. So it's very dangerous that time. That's the cause why there were looting incidents happen within the city. So they really ransacked the stores. Even it was closed, but they destroyed it just to get some food inside. They ransacked the granary of the one of the distributor of the rice mill in Tacloban city, and took all those sacks of rice with them. So it's very dangerous, especially the time that there were no relief goods coming yet. But when we hear that some relief goods will be coming, so I prepare the church officials, and I went to the barangay chairman and talked to them if they can help. They can help us prepare the people so that nobody from outside will just enter and say, take all those relief goods from us or from the people who is a recipient of that relief goods.
9 days after, when we were there, we realized that they needed food quick, fast, and in a hurry, as we say in the Army. And we didn't have time to get stuff shipped internationally for the immediate needs that the people had. The good thing is that there are Lutheran churches on various islands across the Philippines, and we were with the district president of the Mindanao district, which is the area that they're in, and we came up with a plan. And the plan essentially was, we're going to give you, the district, an emergency grant. And the churches that are on the local islands, not Leyte Island, but the surrounding Lutheran churches, are going to get cash to buy food, to make emergency packets. So the Lutherans in the surrounding islands were putting together food packets, and then they were coming over on boat with those food packets to distribute them. So that way it was Lutherans taking care of Lutherans. And since they didn't have the resources on Leyte Island, all that had been taken, stolen, used, and it was very hard to get it onto it, we were importing it for the first few weeks from other islands. And what he was talking about is the problem with theft is you couldn't just say, hey, we're the Lutheran church, we have food, and hold up a sign, because there literally would have been a riot and there would have been no way of controlling that. And you couldn't go with wheelbarrows of food down to your members' homes, because you'd get about 20 feet down the road and someone would t- take it or say, I need this, or you must give it to. It just wouldn't have worked out that way. So they used the local government official and the police force, and they said, hey, this is what we're doing. We're giving out food. Will you help us form a line and add security so that we don't get mobbed? And they did. They did that, and that was the plan that was put into place, and they did it in Pastor Bong's area and also Pastor Nick's. So utilizing the government just for basic security. And one thing that you guys posted on your Facebook site was that when you were distributing the food, obviously you always had your Lutheran vest on that talked about this being the Lutheran church. You did prayers. Could you tell me how that distribution happened when the barangay, the local police, were helping organize that? What was the spiritual care part that you were incorporating with the distribution of the food and the rice packets?
First, we coordinated with the local government, the barangay chairmen and barangay officials. We talked to them that we will be going to distribute some food packs for the community, and we asked them for security, and at the same time we asked the chairman that before we distribute something to the people, could you allow us to offer some words to people so that they will know that the things that they receive will just pass away, but the words of God, the promises of God, and Jesus Christ will remain forever. So that's the very first thing that we did. Then from one barangay to another barangays, we do that thing. Before we distribute those food packs, we share the word of God to them and allow them to see the positive side of life, that there is God who will always take care of us.
What about you, Pastor Nick, as you guys were distributing the food, utilizing the help of the organization of the police, keeping peace and no riots, and how did you go about the kind of the spiritual care and as well as distributing the food?
Yeah, I emphasized to them that this relief food is not a matter of, say, a means to invite you to become a Lutheran, because it will never make the church strong, because people would just go there and would like to become member of the Lutheran church because they receive something from the Lutheran congregation or from the Lutheran people. But then I said to them, what we introduce to you is not the food, but rather it is Christ who is the owner of this food. Because once we planted the seed of, say, material things, it will just pass away. But if we try to plant Christ in their hearts, they will stay with us, even if there will be no food that they receive. It's different when we, you know, we do our evangelism planting Christ and not those things that they, you know, that not those physical things that they receive. Because physical things, if this is the thing that somehow we give them to satisfy their drive, it will never create a Lutheran church which is very strong and will never waver from the faith. They will never become apostate from the faith, even in the absence of food on the table. So I said to them, we plant Christ because we know that if there is Christ, all those things that you need will be provided for. Because it is God who is the author of all these gifts in life. And so if you want to become a member of the Lutheran Church, it's one way of saying that if you want to become a member of the Lutheran Church, I am not inviting you because of these things, but I am inviting you because of Christ. That's the way where I give them and told them about the mercy in Christ and the gospel of Christ. that always there, despite and in the midst of crisis, that there is always Christ in the midst of this disastrous condition we had.
One of the things that Pastor Bong mentioned was the livelihood of the people was decimated. In Leyte Island, it's a forest. I never knew they existed, but it was a coconut tree forest where literally, just like you would see pine tree forests, it's coconut trees. And the coconut trees had snapped in half. So all it was a trunk out of the ground, but the whole top part of that would have the leaves, the palm branches, and the coconuts were completely gone. And all that wood was left, the only use that you had for that tree was to cut it down and to replant it. But to replant coconut groves would take anywhere from 5 to 15 years to be able to harvest them. We saw the fishing industry for months was going to be decimated with the waves and the damage to the currents and to the water all around. You really couldn't fish it. And so all of a sudden, not only was there, we don't have our daily bread today and rice, but what are we going to do to get our jobs back? Anybody that had a boat, who knows where those boats went? So we immediately started talking about livelihood projects. And being more in the countryside, Pastor Bong, it was much easier to do a livelihood rebuilding project. One of the biggest obstacles that they had in Tacloban City was of government restrictions. After substantial disasters, they always come in with new rules. They say, you can't build here, you can build here, you have to build differently. And so the rebuilding had to take a little bit of a pause to rebuild their members' homes. In the countryside, there was much less restrictions. So we were able to start with the rebuilding and the livelihood projects. And I'll give you a little bit more food for this, and then you can answer the rest of the question. With the livelihood project, one of it was a cash for work project, because we didn't want to create a welfare system of here's cash, you need cash. But what we wanted to do is unemploy people that wanted to work. How do we give them work temporarily while the economy is kind of coming back? So what we did is we had a cash for work project, and then the elders and the pastors got together. What are the mechanisms of how this works within our Filipino context? What's fair? What's a fair salary for a day's work? We started a sawmill. We bought some chainsaws, made a sawmill so they could take that broken down coconut wood, chop it up, saw it down so that it's usable in like a 2x2 fashion to be able to start replacing or repairing all the damaged homes. So homes were being reconstructed. People were being paid for the labor that they were doing, and it wasn't just welfare. And from what I saw, especially in your part of this island, nobody was looking for handouts. They were looking more for work. And you know, nobody was saying, just give me stuff for nothing. They were, help us recover. Could you give us some insights into how the cash for work process worked and the benefits, and what were some of the successes or limitations of that?
Okay, for laborers, we gave them 200 pesos per day, and for the skilled workers, around 350 pesos a day. So since we started the rehabilitation, the rebuilding of houses and the church building and the parsonage. So we employed the men, mostly men, men in the church to be part of this work of rebuilding. And so if during the day they spend around the whole day in working, in rebuilding, and building houses, weekly we give them their salary. At least with that they can buy some foods for their family and other needs. And so it's a weekly basis when we give their salary. And the good thing about it is we are helping the church to have cash for themselves. It's not we're not doing it free cash, giving it freely to them, but we want them to be part of this ministry. It's actually a ministry, a cash for work ministry, where they will be part of helping their fellow members their fellow brothers and sisters, while at the same time, we can at least help them with their day-to-day needs.
Pastor Bong, what were kind of ways that you've been able to help rebuild the homes? I know it took a couple of months to be able to start rebuilding their homes, but what process did you use? Because you didn't have the skilled type of labor necessarily to be able to rebuild it, but how did you rebuild all the homes of your members in the community as you started to branch out a little bit?
Yes, because we lacked skilled, workers to rebuild houses. And some of our church members hired skilled worker or carpenters in different place, like Samar, because they have relatives there who knows about carpentry. So they hired them. And it is, again, like what the Mahayo congregation was doing, it is a cost for work program. And so we just give them 6 to 7 or 1 week, period to rebuild their houses. And we give them the shelter kit. So that, aside from that, the wage of skilled worker, it cost $400 a day.
That's $10?
$400 pesos.
$10.
And the non-skilled, $200.
So $5.
Usually when they work the construction of their houses, is that they get one carpenter and two helpers. So that's per day.
As you guys have responded in mercy and compassion and in the time war that was giving food, which was the immediate need, trying to rebuild homes, using cash for work, doing other projects, what has been the end result for your members and your church? Has your church grown, stayed the same? Did everybody leave the faith? What happened spiritually within the members of your congregation and the size of your congregation?
Yeah, the good thing happened there is that when our church members, you know, received their respective building materials and were able to build their respective houses, those people who also received some relief goods, you know, foods and, you know, some canned goods also, rice, when they say that members of the Lutheran Church receive this kind of, say, blessing, especially when they receive those half sack of rice, they began worshiping with us. In fact, today, the numbers of people coming to our church to attend our regular Sunday worship service becomes double. That's the thing happened after we witness to them the mercy and love of God by caring to them and giving them somehow what they need, especially the basic food they need in times when they need it. And that's the miracle that happened when a church was able to witness outside. So people is coming to our church because they already felt the love, the care, and the kind of brotherhood that we give to them. So they felt that they are at home in our church. That's why they now come to us and join with us in our regular worship service.
That was one of the biggest shocking things to me as I came back a few months ago. As we're working on the next plan to put in place, visiting your church. And your biggest issue, and the biggest issue of your elders, was we've outgrown our sanctuary. We have people, when I preach there, they had to kick the children out of the church so that the older people would have a seat to sit in. And literally, they used every inch of that sanctuary. Everybody was sitting like this for the two-hour service. And, you know, everybody was sitting like this. People were exploding out the windows, down the stairs. The children had to make way for the parents and grandparents, so they sat outside the windows, listened to the sermon. And the biggest concern is we need to expand this church, and I know that there is plans with the Bavarian Lutheran Church, I believe it was, to help with the that was how we kind of broke up some of the grant work, as the Bavarians were planning, last I heard, to help with the expansion of the sanctuaries.
Yes, eventually, when you invited me to come to this activity, I was somewhat having that reservation, because 3 days ago, we started our reconstruction of the church building. That's why I at first I have doubt if I can make it, but even if the construction is going on and started when I had the trip from Tacloban to Manila, I already see to it that Monday, 22 or 22nd of September, the renovation started by the demolition of the old church building,
right,
to give way for the reconstruction of the new church building this time.
Outstanding.
So I am thankful to God for that blessing that somehow the Bavarian Church extended to our church for the reconstruction of the building, and even the LCMS, the Ark Alliance, and some tender-hearted members who shared their lives to us, even our co-seminarians before, and he is now pastor in San Diego, California, Reverend Jugi Olivar, also extended his help to our church, and we were happy to learn that somehow there are people outside who loved us and continue to share their lives with us as we also continue to move on our lives for the rebuilding not only of our respective homes, but even our church building in Tacloban City.
Pastor Bong, what was the result in your church? Did the horribleness of the storm, did it drive people away, destroy their faith? Did it encourage their faith? And did the church grow? Or what's happened to your church?
Yeah, it did encourage the members to go to church regularly. And we actually did not invite anyone to come to church from the community. But they just started to go inside the church. And right now, I think there are more than 10 individuals undergo to doctrine class. So the blessing did not only come to material things, but also to spiritual things to people. So we are growing. So we are thankful to God. Though there are negative things happen, but the positive things that God did to us is marvelous. So that's the great thing happened to our church.
One last question I have for you guys before President James comes up and talks from his perspective as a church bishop, what to do when you see so much hurt within congregations in a role from a position of leadership. What was the Bible verses or scriptures that you reflected on that gave you the most comfort during this time?
Yes, I won't forget the verse in the Bible wherein when I experienced the Typhoon Haiyan, the crisis that we had experienced considering the lives of people, the mortality rate of people that died, and the many days or weeks that we experienced darkness, experience the lack of, say, drinking water, foods on the table. The thing somehow made me realize that sometimes
Even if you're a Christian, you will always expect that things, sometimes unfavorable conditions or situations may be experienced by those people. But even then, it will somehow give us some hope. And I was reminded of the words that always reflected on my mind when in every corner of the streets, I always read the words, we may be roofless, we may be homeless, but we are not faithless and we are not hopeless. That's why Tacloban City right now is being called the City of Hope because of that event. And it reminds me again of the scripture when the Bible says that all things work together for good for those who love God. Although because of that event, many houses were destroyed. But like Job, their houses today were rebuilt and they have a new houses. The same is true with our church building. Our old building has gone and God replaced it with a new one. And not only a new one, but it is larger than the previous building we had. And thank God for this.
Amen.
Yeah, to me, I think John 14:1-3, do not let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God and trust also in me. In my Father's house, in the lower part, I'm going to prepare a place for you. Something like that. I always give this encouragement to our congregation, though we don't have houses anymore, but Jesus Christ, the best carpenter, is preparing a good house, better house, a golden house in heaven, and we are looking forward to that.
Amen. At this time, we want to have President James come up. He has a brief presentation from his perspective as a church president, and then we're going to close out with a video that shows the Cash for Work program, some videos of what the response has been in both Leyte and also in Tacloban City.
Well, before I came, actually one of the pastors told me, Pastor or Mr. President, are you traveling? And I said, yes. And he told me, I think it's best for you not to travel outside of the country. And I asked why. In June, I was in St. Louis to attend a reunion of former missionaries to the Philippines. One of the employees of the church who lives close to the office accidentally had a stroke and hit his head on a hard object and he passed away. Then, only last, I think, 3 weeks ago, I was again in the States. Before I came home, my secretary and bookkeeper told everyone through Facebook she was diagnosed of cancer stage 3. And that made me think. Unfortunately, that day, November 8, 2013, when the storm hit the country, I was again in Germany. Well, I did not believe in faith, Talism. I'm here. And I hope nothing bad happened in my church again. Well, first thing I believe is, if you look at this picture, it's a temporary shelter made by children. But if you look at it, in the midst of destruction and calamities, you can see their smiles. And many outside of the country, foreigners, people outside of the country believe Filipinos are very resilient people, that we can easily bounce back. And I think this expresses so much the hope that we have in the midst of our calamities. When I was in Germany, when I woke up that morning, I didn't understand what is being said on TV. I could only speak three words, German words, Guten Morgen and Danke. So then I realized the value of communication in times of calamities. I tried to talk to the pastors in the areas, but they were not available because there was no power, no electricity, everything about communication is nothing. I talked to the president. I instructed him, form people to go and assist and look on what we can do to our brothers in the area. I told them, see to it. No one gets cold. No one gets angry. And I'm so happy that the congregations of the Lutheran Church in the Philippines responded positively, and from among the resources, funds were raised, and these were used to buy and bring immediate relief to our brothers and sisters in those affected areas. So the first thing they did, the group that went there, is to make an assessment, an evaluation on how to do the relief efforts and how we can extend help to our brothers in the area. After that, of course, locally, we, as I've said, we purchased things, and then when help from other partner churches arrived, you could see the magnitude of the help that came in, and we were able not only to provide to do it that no one gets cold and hungry among the members of the church, but also even in the communities that are nearby. Then one thing I would say very important is the value of the proclamation of the word in the midst of tragedies and calamities. These pastors told you also that before the distribution of any relief, the proclamation of the word happens. And we see to it, and we agreed that we will always do that. So in here, as you can see, the pastors, of course, doing that, the proclamation of the word. And as I've said a while ago, the allies, partner churches came. And the expression of solidarity of partner churches with us in those times of disaster or catastrophes is so overwhelming. And I think I would like to take this chance to say thank you to everyone, to the LCMS, the members of the International Lutheran Council, I think Lutheran Church Canada, LCC, Lutheran Church Charities. If you notice one of the pictures a while ago with the generators, the first thing we did when I visited those areas is, because there was no electricity for months, we provided generators, not only generators, but solar lamps to homes and families so that in the midst of the darkness that they are experiencing, there is light in their homes. So these are our partner churches assisting us. And as I've said, the value of meeting and trying to assess, trying to focus on what steps next we can do. Well, these are just some of the disasters, the effect of the damage done. These are our alert team. We formulated an alert, meaning active Lutherans emergency response team. One of the blessings that we have in the Lutheran Church in the Philippines is before this disaster hit the country, through the help of the LCMS, a disaster training, a response training was held in Hong Kong. And we had people who were there, who were sent there and attended the training, and they serve as volunteers, knowing how and what to do in times of disasters like this. I think these are the goods that are being prepared for distribution. Meeting of, again, the people involved, the alert team, together with some people who volunteered to help. Also, here you could see the concern of so many members of the church, and sometimes even non-members. I think Pastor Ross mentioned something about people wearing vests during the distribution, and a very, I would say, ironical that one of those who is wearing the vest is a Muslim. He is actually the driver of the truck that was used to carry those packs, and he is a Muslim, and he's wearing that vest. So as I've said, members and non-members in times of calamities, they think of no boundaries, but they all work together to help people in need. These are the trucks and the goods. So I would just shorten my talk, and I would say first is the value of communication, the value also of preparation, so that efforts will be focused on what to do. And another is the value of finding out what resources do you have, so that you could start working through those. And one last value that I believe help us so much, especially the pastors involved and the responders, is what happened, we call it the aftercare conference or respite conference. When we were told about this by LCMS partners to have a conference, an aftercare or respite conference, one of the pastors jokingly said, "I don't think we need that." In fact, if you talk to Pastor Nick, who have seen so many corpses or bodies, dead bodies, in front of the parsonage and smelling all the bad odors and everything, if you go and visit him 3 days or 4 days or 5 days after that, he would tell you stories, but with all smiles. Do we need to have aftercare and respite conference? Some people say no, but we had. And after the conference, I talked to pastors, even the families of these pastors and those responders, and they really appreciated the value of an aftercare conference, because in that conference, the traumatic experiences that they had at least diminished, if not totally eradicated, and it helped them get rejuvenated and refreshed for another work, which they have been doing the last phase of the rehabilitation. Again, I would say for everything that happened in the church, in the midst of my absence, I want to say thank you to everyone, to all these pastors, and especially we say, to God be the glory. Thank you, and God's blessings to everyone.
Thanks, Pastor James, for reminding me the aftercare retreat. That's one thing that we did for all the church workers that were active in the response, doing spiritual care, that were living, seeing these overwhelming horrible things. What we did is we had an aftercare retreat, a time of getting the pastors away from the area for just a few days, getting them a change of scenery, but not just a change of scenery, but it was a time to talk about rebuilding in Christ. And we talked about what is it like to go through a disaster, what is considered natural and normal, and how do we rejuvenate ourselves in a positive way so that we don't burn out as church workers. Across the United States, especially over the last 10 years, one thing that we found with church workers, even especially with Katrina, is a tragically large number of pastors leave the ministry after they've gone through times of traumatic stress in times of disaster, or I feel like they have left the ministry tragically due to falling into public sin, because I think the devil likes to exploit people and their temptations and their weaknesses. And when you're run down, burned out, it's a lot harder to fight against the sinful temptations that one has. And so what we've been trying to do after a traumatic event is to try to strengthen and renew those pastors. And that's what President James was talking about. I want to finish our presentation today with one last video, and it will show you a little bit about what was happening about 5 months after the storm hit. And then I'll have them come up one last time.
On November 8, 2013, a deadly tropical cyclone, Typhoon Haiyan, struck the Philippines with savage ferocity. Some 5 months later, the death toll approaches 7,000.
Plenty of dead bodies arriving, and they put the dead bodies at the corner of that next street.
The injured numbered more than 28,000, and some 1,800 people are still missing. More than 1 million homes were destroyed. But now, a sense of hope has settled over this island nation as recovery and rebuilding efforts intensify.
We were here 8 days after the storm hit. It was somber. It was sad. People were disillusioned. In many ways, they didn't have very much hope. But what we see right now is the mood has totally changed. Smiles of gratitude, smiles of thanksgiving. And you can see how the Filipino spirit has returned to these people. And it's great to be a part, as the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, of the great things that are happening here.
In partnership with the Lutheran Church in the Philippines, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod worked quickly to bring aid and relief to the people of the Philippines with a number of targeted projects.
They've reached out with the gospel and projects like a Cash for Work project, a livelihood project, a sawmill project, a coca wood project. They've reached out also with a ministry to the schools there in the area.
LCMS disaster response grants made possible the shipment of thousands of boxes filled with over 500,000 individual food packets and much more.
We've been helping them with rice, food, hygiene products. We've also been giving them a basic shelter. The homes that were being built are homes that are made out of cinder block, coconut wood, and corrugated metal roofing.
Typhoon-damaged homes have been repaired, and new homes are being built, along with bunkhouses that serve as emergency housing for congregation members.
Can you tell us what this building will be used for?
That's for our members whose houses were destroyed totally. Okay. Yeah. So we gave them some space there.
It's been amazing seeing the amount of work that they've done here on this side of the island of Leyte, the amount of homes that have been rebuilt, the amount of roofs that have been put back on. After the storm, essentially every home had roof damage or was completely destroyed down to the foundation. And what we're seeing now through the generous donations of the members of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the vast majority of the homes have been rebuilt.
When I went to those areas and talked to many people, not only out to among our members, but even to people in the community who were shared, who were given relief during the early days of the disaster, they were saying so many good things, like better for the Lutherans, because when they give so many. And they give not only to their members, but even to the people in the community.
I happened to see this old man, 98 years old, living in that, like a, I don't know how do we call it, teepee. Yeah, living in that teepee. He's eating there, sleeping there. And said, and I said to myself, we are giving much to our members and we just passed by this old fellow here. So I said, okay, we'll go back and we'll build a house for this fellow. I'll bring all those carpenters there. In the afternoon, then they all built his house for 4 hours. And he was amazed, actually. He said, is this really my house? My house was broken by the, damaged by the typhoon. And is this really my house? Then his neighbors around said, yeah, that's your house.
Much of the relief work has been concentrated in Mahayag, Balugo, and Tacloban City. The disaster response teams of the Lutheran Church in the Philippines, supported by the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, continue to make good progress.
The team, the alert team of LCP, are now rehabilitating the Christ Lutheran Church Mahayag in Albuera, and maybe next week they will be concentrating Tacloban City. And our church members are happy when they heard that the building materials are now there.
This Lutheran partnership approach to disaster relief work brings benefits far beyond earthly, physical, or emotional assistance. The benefits can extend to the eternal.
It gives us the opportunity to be known as a church that cares, a church that loves. And so when those gifts were given, I was told that the word was also preached.
Expressions of gratitude and joy greeted the LCP and LCMS relief team as they traveled the region to continue assessing ongoing needs.
The materials came from the Lutheran, so from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and the carpenters hired were from the Lutherans too.
What has made it possible for you and your family to be able to recover after the storm?
They get the rope, lumber, nails, but it is not yet finished.
Word cannot express. I'm very thankful to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod for giving us this materials for us to worship. Because, you know, before we've been worshiping even without roof.
Another vital aspect of the response to the devastation wrought by the typhoon is the administration of care and mercy to the caregivers, the men, women, and families of the Lutheran Church in the Philippines. To accomplish this, an aftercare retreat was hosted by LCMS Disaster Response.
I don't think we can quite understand, unless you've been through a natural disaster before, what it does to your nerves, what it does to your stress level, what it does to your emotions, and just the time for the families to really recharge is very important, and you can't put a price tag on that. This will actually allow the families to be able to function in the way that they need to, because they're experiencing nearly 24 hours, 7 days a week, many, many devastating situations. Even now, it's going to take years for this disaster relief to come to a point where they're back to their normal lives.
Pray for the Philippines, because we are not thinking on individual feelings that we have, but we are, you know, like for us, we are doing this to glorify our Lord.
I would like to thank God, and I would like to thank God for using the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod for their continuous help.
When I appealed for assistance, the generosity, the kindness that we received was extreme. And so I say thank you very much to everyone.
The relationship between the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and the Lutheran Church in the Philippines is a classic example of what it means to know, witness mercy and life together. How we unite in fellowship, how we unite in mercy, and how we unite in the proclamation of the gospel of Jesus Christ.
To have the Filipinos come back up for 1 second and present them with a gift from us at the conference. Just had a couple last-minute announcements. For the pastors on Leyte Island, we wanted to give you the Peace Be Still. It's Jesus talking to nature itself. And it's a great reminder that even in the midst of our storms, that God is in control, that Christ is in control of this world. So this is for Pastor Bong. This is the similar one is for Pastor Nick and for Pastor James. Since he is the president, we like the Feed My Sheep as he continues to faithfully support his church.